they say that saying, what's that saying? Survival of the fittest. To me, it's really more survival of the flexible.
From Melvin Studios up here in Lincoln City, Oregon, I'm Melanie, and this is Mindspace.
Over Coffee.
Episode 2. And I'm your host. Over Coffee is for those looking for simple discussions with a catch. We dive deep, but it's easy to follow and understand. Just like talking over coffee in the morning. Today, our focus is adaptability. What it is, where it came from, and how it affects us. Like all things we discuss here, we'll talk about it in three levels. Physical, personal, and psychological. Adaptability. If anyone can talk about adaptability, it's a full-time RVer. Oh, we need to replace two tires that will cost us $500? Oh, we're enjoying our evening and we hear a loud pop, which happens to be the line to our toilet? Oh, it's spitting up water all the way to the ceiling? Cool.
Cool, man.
We're human. We're adaptable by nature. We weren't created and left without any tools. Thank you, God. We were given a mind, hands, feet, and even humor. But in this day and time, adaptability looks a little different. It is very small and makes a lot of noise. Yes, I'm talking about smartphones. Adaptability has taken on a different face than it has in the past, but it's just as important to our survival as it ever has been. So it looks different? What does that mean? When I think of adaptability, I don't just think of going with the flow or getting on with it. I think hard and fast emotion laced with the ability to come out of a situation having learned something. The key to adaptability is learning. Take driving, for example. Have you ever been in a car crash? Or even just a fender bender? Why does this happen? What can we do to avoid it? These are the questions we ask ourselves after the incident. Man, if I hadn't been looking at my phone, or if I had paid attention to where I was, I wouldn't have made the mistake of taking that turn too sharp. Like a lot of things we face, adaptability is a spectrum, and it exists in a cycle. One, you have the choice to ignore a situation and its consequences only to A, make the same mistake over again. Two, you have the choice to admit your mistake and B, make amends. Now, this isn't a magical solution. It may not work every time, but adaptability gives us space. Space we don't always give ourselves. So where do you come in? Think of where you spend most of your time. Why are you there more often than anywhere else? Adaptation. That space is yours. You feel comfortable there. It meets all the necessary requirements you have for feeling safe. It's also probably the space you feel more yourself than anywhere else. And it doesn't have to be your home. It can literally be anywhere. Animals adapt to their physical environments and they rely on them for safety and shelter like we do. And some of them live in the ground and trees. So your space can literally be anywhere. Like with the stuff we own, adaptation also affects us personally and psychologically. Take a relationship, for example. Sometimes in our relationships, we adapt to the behavior of ourselves and they adapt to ours. In our evolutionary history, this was for the stability of our tribes. It was good for us to be together, no matter how we felt or thought about the actions of others. If their behavior got too bad or was harmful to the rest of the group, we adapted in a different way, if you catch my drift. But we still do the same things in our relationships. Now, this isn't always a negative thing. Friendships allow us a unique relationship outlet we not only crave in the deepest parts of us, but that we also rely on for survival. Survival of our emotional, healthy psyche. A recent study done by Harvard found that after 80 years of research, we finally know that relationships and joy play a bigger part in our emotional health than fitness and dieting alone. Go figure. But what does that mean for our daily lives? What do car crashes, relationships, and birds and trees have in common? Somewhere along the way, we face a choice. A choice to be careful driving. A choice to find a place we feel secure. Or a choice to better understand ourselves and others. But as always, the choice is ours. My first guest today is a full-time RVer,
I'm Liz Wilcox. I'm 29 years old.
Liz is not a stranger to adapting to life's many changes, especially when you're forced to acquiesce or hit the road, Jack.
I grew up in a town in northern Michigan of about 200 people, and in high school I moved to Florida and experienced great culture shock, so to speak.
After telling herself she'd never move again, especially after adapting to a circumstance she didn't plan for herself, Liz found herself having to adapt all over again.
And I met my husband and moved 6 months later because he's in the Army.
As a kid, Liz was pretty shy. Nervous even. But not long after, Liz joined a group that taught her how to think, how to problem solve, for the first time.
Then I joined this club called Odyssey of the Mind, and it is basically a creative problem solution team that you work with six other kids and you solve problems through performance, and that kind of started getting me out of my shell. So I joined that and that kind of started getting me out of my shell. And then when I was 15, my mom said that we were moving to Florida. Of course, I thought she was ruining my life. I said, "Oh, Mom, I hate you. Why are you doing this? How could you do this to me? You know what a weirdo I am, and now I have to start all over." And because I lived in a small town. I went to school with the same people, elementary school through right. high school. There was like 70 of us. And so it had taken me a long time to work this crowd.
Okay, all of us can relate to being teenagers and our parents ruining our lives in one way or another. But little did Liz know, this would be the beginning of a very interesting journey for her.
We're driving down the road. And I'm like, okay, maybe I should give this a shot. Florida seems cool. Look at the palm trees. This is like I'm on MTV or something. This is cool. You know, we moved like an hour away from Panama City Beach. I knew about spring break back then, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, all right, this is cool. Our jaws just dropped. It was this itty-bitty trailer that had probably been there for, I don't know, at least 30, 40 years.
Wow.
It looked like it needed to be condemned. And my mom just started crying. You know, she was trying to, she had moved there on a whim mm-hmm. with, from her father's advice, who she was trying, you know, he was estranged and they were trying to get a relationship back together. And I guess he had just lied, or maybe he's psycho. I mean, the verdict's still out. We move in, and that's really when I started using those life skills that I had learned from Odyssey of the Mind, like to really learn how to adapt and notice what was in my control and what wasn't. I remember sitting in health class, you know, probably about 6 months into living in Florida, mm-hmm. and they were teaching us about the nuclear family and, you know, being in a loving home and, you know, how a family was supposed to look. And I just thought, gosh, you know, my family's so messed up right now. We're always fighting. Then I remember the next day or something, we were learning about how to control our emotions and really harness our anger and, you know, try to understand where it's coming from. And I'll never forget that day. I was like, what? You can control yourself? That's when I really started learning that you could adapt to situations and you didn't just have to be a one big reaction.
And if you think that's hard as an adult, can you imagine going through that at 15?
I was having this like flood of memories of everyone just yelling at each other and, you know, just blaming each other and blaming everything on something else. And I thought, I don't have to be that way. And from that moment on, I started really changing my life. I started realizing what they were saying. And this is, I mean, in a silly little health class that most kids fall asleep in, like the biggest epiphany of my life to
wow.
this day. And I just started, you know, picking up on what I can control. Okay, I couldn't control where I lived. I couldn't control who my family was. I mean, my mom worked like a dog her whole life. Of course she was angry. She was always working. Mm. I would be angry too if I worked 60 to 80 hours a week.
And had children to come home to.
Yeah, I had ungrateful parents. I'd be ticked off.
And I know we've been talking about how we're given adaptable habits, but we're not born with it. It's learned. The key to adaptability is learning, like we talked about earlier. But we are given the tools. It's just that not everybody uses them.
that's when I started to learn and started to really practice that controlling what I could and letting go of what I couldn't.
Maybe on the bridge between comfort and the unknown lies a box, a pretty big box. When you get there, it's empty, and you realize it's for all the stuff you're carrying. When you fill the box and get to the other side, you find adaptability.
I couldn't control where I lived, but I could help it. So I got a job. I gave my mom my paycheck. I mean, my main motivation was I loved my mom. And once I started realizing, like, that I could control myself, I knew that I wanted to help my mom learn that too.
As a teenager, you're navigating the world for the first time. You're in a space within yourself that has yet to be experienced. The world is yours. But your happiness doesn't always feel like something you own. Before you realize your own happiness, you desire the happiness of your loved ones. And Liz was no different. She desired the happiness of her loved ones before her own.
I think it was mainly love that taught me or that got me to really thinking about it. I loved my mom. I loved my sister. I loved my stepdad. I just wanted the best for them, and I didn't want to contribute to their unhappiness. I realized that, you know, I wanted that nuclear family that we had talked about in health class, and I thought, well, why can't I have that?
And unlike most, when Liz came upon the box on the bridge, she put all of that stuff in there, continued forward, and didn't look back.
It really was out of love that I started adapting. I mean, I knew if I didn't, that things were going to go really badly. I just saw so many adults unhappy in their life. My willingness to help out with the family and everything, you know, it didn't change the world or anything, but I think that it really changed me and it started to change my family as well. They say that saying, what's that saying? Survival of the fittest. To me, it's really more survival of the flexible.
Survival of the flexible. Yes, you can quote her. And while I promise not to immediately go online and get a t-shirt made with that saying, I just think, wow, she's really onto something.
You don't have to be the strongest or, you know, yeah. I'm right, you're wrong. It's really like, okay, who can go with the flow on this? I will give you one example where I did not adapt very well. And now that I look back, I just laugh at myself because so ridiculous. So I've been married for almost 4 years and I got married pretty quickly. I met my husband and we got married 9 months later and we had a baby 10 months after that. And wow. Like I told you, I moved from Florida. I was living in a hotel room. I had a golf view. I was, you know, happy, single, ready to mingle type of gal. 18 months later, I am this mommy. And I was like, whoa, how did this happen? And I remember as I was pregnant, I remember feeling this sort of rejection of what I had done with my life. Like, whoa, I could be on the beach right now.
Some of us are all too familiar with rejection from others. But what about rejection from ourselves? What is that?
I realized that it was that initial kind of like shock, like, oh, what did I do? I got married and now I'm pregnant right away. Like,
right.
You know, by the time I had my child almost 3 years ago, I was so fully rejecting it. I mean, I truly believe if we didn't have modern medicine, I would have died on the table because I was rejecting. I was not adapting to the situation at all. I tell my husband that all the time. He's like, oh, babe, you did so good. I'm like, no, I didn't. I was ready to go. I was like, wow. Jesus, take the wheel.
Somewhere inside of us, that adaptability mechanism is screaming, you can do this, while the rest of us is saying, no, you can't. And it's even more severe when we perceive that our identity is at stake. Will this change who I am?
It took me about almost 2 years to sort of accept that I had done this to myself. You know, I had had the baby and I loved my child. That was never a question.
Sure.
It was just, I was at university for 6 years. I have my master's degree in leadership, you know, and then 3 months later I had a baby and it was going from that, ooh, everyone cares about your opinion.
Right.
And people want to know what you have to say to hanging out with somebody who doesn't speak English and craps their pants all day long. I did not adapt. That is the big thing. I could not, or I would not accept that I couldn't change this. You know, I was like, okay, I can go back to work. I can get a nanny. I can do this. I can do that. I can still be Liz.
Right.
You know, but I wasn't accepting that, you know, Liz Wilcox was a different person.
And so we come to the last phase of adaptability, acceptance. Acceptance of who we are, what we've been through, and who we end up becoming.
I'm married. I have a child. That I was in complete control of. Why am I out of control with it now? You know?
Yeah.
So once I started going back to just the basics of being able to adapt to different situations, different phases of life, and being flexible with pretty much just my view of myself, you know? Then I was able to sort of get out of that, woe is me, oh my gosh. What did I do with my life?
Right.
I was actually talking to someone 2 days ago about this, and we were talking about how people react to sort of stories of success. And I think it's hard for people that are close to me to hear these stories because they can say things like, oh, well, that's just easy for you. But it's not. I mean, just that story of having a baby, you know, that wasn't easy for me. That was something that I really struggled with. But I think the story of me being so young and learning that, I don't find a lot of people relate to that.
Right.
The more stories that I tell of my adaptation through phases of life, the more it resonates with people.
Acceptance is in the eye of the beholder. If other people aren't willing to adapt and learn from their experiences, they will be less likely to appreciate your journey of adaptability. And that includes your successes and triumphs.
And I think that's true for anyone that's trying to share their story. I think you have to have come from more than one angle, or it might seem unbelievable.
When tragedy strikes, adaptability takes on a whole new meaning.
My brother died when he was 25, and I think relatively I, you know, accepted it pretty quickly. I had my sibling's dad and my dad. He died 2 weeks before, and it was just a complete...
Oh, my gosh.
It was just boom, 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 you know? And
wow.
So my family had a really hard time with it, and I saw my sister and my mom just not adapting to it very well, just, you know, rejecting the whole thing. This is unreal. This isn't true. This isn't true. You know, it's just that basic, I guess, survival instinct.
Right, definitely.
So you don't have to deal with the grief.
But what are the consequences of not growing through your grief?
My mom still really hasn't adapted to it. She always said, the only thing I ever did right was my kids. And so when one of them passed, you know, she just couldn't believe it. She just said, my whole purpose is my children. This cannot be happening. It's been 8 years now, and she still is rejecting it, and she's suffering terrible consequences. She's lost her job, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. She's gained 150 pounds, been homeless on and off. I mean, you know, she has good days and bad days, but overall, she has not adapted at all. If you have a major life change and you're not willing to accept the things you can't control and focus on the things that you can,
right?
You know, there are dire consequences. I'm sure anyone listening to this can think of an example where, oh yeah, that person just could not, would not adapt to what had happened to them. It's easy to come up with examples like that, unfortunately. I think overall, adapting is basically just learning what you can control and focusing on that, getting creative with it, and letting go of what you can't control. I think it's really important to know yourself. In college, I learned the word metacognition, and it's just thinking about your thinking, and it skyrockets your growth when you start thinking, why do I believe this? Why am I acting this way? Why did that just make me so dang mad?
Is it really that simple? Does my answer lie in such a small question?
it's something you don't think of. You just feel it, right. You know? It's not easy, but it becomes easy to recognize what is in your control and what isn't. And once you can at least somewhat control your thoughts or redirect your thoughts, then the world is yours and you can conquer anything, really.
If you'd like to hear more about Liz and what she's up to, check her out at lizwilcox.com. And if you're in the mood for some laughs, her ebook, Tales from the Black Tank, will do the trick. My next guest is somebody very important to me. My husband, Jeremy, hiked the entire Appalachian Trail back in 2013. And while everybody has their idea of what adaptability looks like in everyday life, trail life is a bit different. What happens when you're not ready to come home?
I'm just drinking some rum, don't worry about it. What inspired me to hike the Appalachian Trail? That's like one of the things that people always ask. Just why? Why? And I think my kind of go-to answer was always, why not?
Our current circumstances play a major part in allowing us the option to try something new. When our current endeavors fall flat, sometimes we start thinking outside the box.
So before I through hiked the Appalachian Trail, I had been in the Air Force for 6 years. And my job was inside of a modular building in a cubicle farm without any windows or anything. And I just sat at a desk, which was very much the opposite of what I thought joining the Air Force was going to be like. I thought it was going to be this kind of, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to travel the world and it's going to be amazing. And I was stuck in Georgia and not quite what I thought. That's when I got into hiking and I literally Googled hiking trails in Georgia and saw that there was this 83-mile trail in Georgia called the Appalachian Trail. And I was like, whoa, 83 miles, that's, I've never been backpacking before, that'll be interesting. And then I wikied that and saw that 83 miles turned into over 2,000 miles and it stretched all the way into Maine. And I thought, what? Why? And then I read what thru-hikers were and that thru-hikers are the ones that hike all the way in one setting, not one setting, in one...
Technically one go.
Through hikers hike the whole thing in one go, in one season. What are these people doing? Why would they ever do that? And it couldn't get out of my mind. I started thinking, this was 3 years. I had 3 years left in the Air Force. I'm going to do this. And I didn't know if I was going to get out of the Air Force yet. I could never think of a good reason as to why to go do something. Logically, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, why? Yeah, I'm going to go spend 6 months in the wilderness walking 2,186 miles from Georgia to Maine, just because, I mean, to be honest, it's not even like the most beautiful part of the country. There are some really nice places, to be sure, but it wasn't fun the whole time. It wasn't really pretty. A lot of it was just slogging and monotonous. So why is just because. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to find something else. I don't know what that's going to be, but I'm going to hike the trail and then find something else. And I think that was a little scary at first, stepping out of a good career. I don't want to say I was good in the Air Force, but I was good in the Air Force. I was being promoted. A lot of people said, I mean, just from my character, the way I was in the military, I was a very good fit in the military. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm back working for the federal government. It's because I know the system. I know how to work with a team like that. I know how to be professional when I need to be. I'm not always professional. I'm drinking rum right now with my wife. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't actually know that. I didn't know that that's how you found out what the AT was. That would have been a shock for me. Be like, oh, 83 miles turns into 2,200 miles. That's neat for a lot of other people, just not me.
No, that's what I thought at first too.
That's crazy.
I'm like, people do this? That's crazy. And then I became people.
Side note, we also felt the same way about full-time RVing. We had seen the pictures, we'd heard the stories of other people. other people, not us. And I think that's where the general we gets into trouble. We tell ourselves that we can't do something we want to do long enough that we start to believe it. And if we attempt to do that thing and fail, sometimes we give up for good.
Most people, I think it's like, I want to say 25% of the people that quit, quit within the first 40 miles.
And what do they call them? There's a term.
Quitters? What's funny, though, is that when I first started learning about the Appalachian Trail, I thought of people that thru-hiked it and kind of this really distant relationship, like the almost like idols, like, oh my gosh, these people are amazing. They can take off the time and go do this amazing adventure. I wish I could be someone who could do something like that. And then I would meet thru-hikers and I thought, oh, this is amazing. You've thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then now that I've done it, and it was so normal, and I know the ins and outs of the entire process, and it was just a part of my life, it doesn't seem that special at all.
Our desire to over-specialize the things we do or the feats we overcome is the reason why we've started handing out participation medals. What does that mean to someone who has done the thing, so to speak, accomplished something great? To them, it's not because of the medal. It's the doing.
The Appalachian Trail is like you couldn't look at the whole thing in one bit. It would probably drive you mad. So you're just kind of focusing on what was right in front of you and what you had to deal with kind of in the immediate sense. So when you went into town, you'd have to, I would have to think about, okay, where am I going next week? What do I need for this next week? What do I need for today? What do I need for tomorrow? And then I'll think about that afterwards. If I were to think about the next 6 months all in one sitting, it wouldn't have been fun at all. I don't think I would have ever done it. I didn't always succeed at going along. I failed quite often, actually. But I think most of the time, we kind of just went into, I always call it this void, where I think that was one of the biggest things I learned from being on trail, was going into this type of mindset where my brain just went blank. And it was almost like a meditative state where I wasn't aware of anything else but kind of the most important things. Which weirdly, it was really interesting because when I was walking, because I would walk for 8 hours a day, that time would fly by and I wouldn't even really pay attention. But most of the time my body was just focused on getting water, getting food, resting when my body told me to rest. And then the rest of the time it just kind of shut off and I just walked on auto. Almost like a dolphin hibernating, where they just swim around with half of their brain active. It's kind of what it felt like for walking most of the time, but only later in the hike. So adapting to trail and trail life, I think, was pretty easy because I wanted to be there. I'm not the best. I mean, there are lots of different thru-hikers, and Zach Davis, who wrote Appalachian Trials, put it best. I think he said that the first month of hiking the AT is like a honeymoon. It's the honeymoon period. You're excited to be out there. You've been planning it for a while. You've been anticipating this moment of starting this through hike. And lots of things can happen. And actually, still to this day, out of the 6 months and 10 days that I was out hiking, the first 2 weeks of hiking are the most memorable because everything was kind of more ingrained into my brain. After that, it started to become normal and routine, and I didn't really pay attention. It's very, very difficult for me to remember what it was like later on in the hike, especially towards the end because it was so normal. The adaptation on trail is that some of it's really quick to notice. So when you first get out there, you're like, oh, okay, I have to get all of my own water. I have to filter my water. I have to carry all of my own food. I have to, everything that's on my back, I need to survive and stay moderately comfortable, so like a tent and a sleeping bag, so I don't freeze to death each night, especially in the beginning because there was a lot of snow and ice when I first started. And then other things are a little bit more subtle. You start to, since there's a lot of people hiking, you join in what's called trail culture, and everyone is kind of dubbed or given a trail name. My trail name was Timber, and for 6 months, my name was Timber, and 6 months later, it was weird adjusting back to Jeremy. Snow, lots of rain, heat. Yeah, the heat was the worst part. A lot of times I remember there was an entire month which just straight up sucked. There was a heat wave coming through the Mid-Atlantic area, just going through New Jersey. New Jersey is when I think it was the worst, mainly because there were lots of, surprisingly, there were swamps in New Jersey with swarms of mosquitoes. So we were low and it was hot and swampy. So it was muggy. So it got up. There was one day, I think actually this was in New York, started hiking at 3 o'clock in the morning and was trying to get as far as I could before it got that hot. Ended up stopping at 10 a.m. and it was already 100 degrees. Once had heat exhaustion, had to take 2 days off just to recover from that, and wasn't thinking too clearly about it. I was drinking tons of water, but I wasn't replenishing my electrolytes. But when you're outside for your entire life, basically, I mean, yeah, walking in the heat, and you're expending a lot of energy and sweating a lot, and you don't have an opportunity to cool off. You'd be sleeping outside in 80, 90 degrees, and you would still be sweating throughout your sleep. So, yeah, that was the hardest part. The cold was a lot easier to deal with. You just kept moving, and you'd warm up, and I had all the gear I needed. And then as soon as you stop moving, you throw on some extra layers or you jump into your sleeping bag and you're fine. I think that was kind of one of the best parts of the experience, was being forced into situations where you had to adapt in order to either survive or be as comfortable as possible. And I think the reason why it was my favorite part is that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of challenge that really kind of gives us this deep level of satisfaction in life. Because when we go through something cookie cutter and we know what the results are going to be, and there's no fear in that, there's no surprise, there's no overcoming, there's no satisfaction from that. You just get to the other side just like you thought you were. But when you go into something with a high factor of unknowability, and there's fear involved, and that takes courage, that takes something inside of us to go into something not knowing what's going to happen, and then getting out of that builds something special in us, that builds character, that builds confidence, that allows us to understand kind of where we belong in this world better. Just from something simple as, hey, the temperature's dropping and it's starting to rain. This is a kind of a tricky situation. What do I do? And yeah, you can do a little bit of research. You can do some training. But once you get into that situation and you start to feel it in your body, that's when you really understand how to deal with something.
When life as we know it shows a different face, we can accept or reject what we see. If we reject it, there's a good chance we'll become miserable. If we accept it, we make room for growth. We make room for a new part of ourselves.
And I think that is one of the more interesting things about backpacking or doing anything long distance, is that you intentionally put yourself in these situations where things can go wrong one way or another. And when things do go wrong, being able to pull yourself out of it and get to the other side and then talk about it and reflect on it, and like having this conversation right now, you know, we learned something, and there's a story there. You know, driving to work or a commute every day, you know how that's gonna go. You forget about it as soon as you arrive to your destination. If something happens, or you know, I'm gonna decide to go a different way or a different means of transportation, or just something else entirely different where there's a high degree of the unknown, then there's a story there. You've learned something. You've put yourself in a situation where you've learned something. I think that's kind of the crux of adaptability, is you learn something from it every time. There's a lot of growth involved. When I finished hiking, it was more sudden and more unexpected than I had thought, and I think the problem was I hadn't even thought about it. So going to trail, I knew, you know, I was really excited. It was something I was looking forward to, something I intended to do, and I'd been looking forward to. What time of year was it? It was September. September 10th, 2013, summoning beautiful Katahdin, the highest point in Maine.
Action.
Just came around the corner and saw Katahdin for the first time in 2,100 miles.
Starting from Georgia, we've been walking the whole time just to see that and eventually climb up it. But I don't know. None of us could believe that we actually saw it when we got up here. It's beyond words. It's kind of just crazy to just see the end. Just to see it is something else.
And finishing the trail. And it was a very, very strange feeling, because I had been hiking every day, well, almost every day, for 6 months and 10 days. And I completely became used to it. Actually, a few months into it, I couldn't even remember what it was like not to be hiking. And then all of a sudden, I was on a plane flying back to Texas, where it was still hot, still muggy, and I was leaving the Northeast United States where fall had already set in. And I think the worst part was getting home and taking a shower in the same shower that I had taken 1,000 showers. And I immediately felt this huge sense of unease that I was stuck somewhere. I was more comfortable sleeping outside than I was sleeping inside, and I was more comfortable with moving every day than I was with being stagnant. I think with hiking the Appalachian Trail, it was something very simple but very satisfying with just hiking north every day. A very, very simple goal. It wasn't easy, necessarily, but it was simple. So when people say you thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, I'm like, yeah, it was just something I did. Just like my time in the Air Force, just like going to university, or just like being a park ranger now. It's just something I did. And I've sat down with some people who had questions about hiking the Appalachian Trail, and I tell everyone the hardest part about hiking the Appalachian Trail, through hiking the Appalachian Trail, is scheduling the time and putting a date on the calendar. And when I came home, I had all of these competing distractions in my life, and I didn't know what was important, what was a priority, because everything was different. I could get water from a faucet, I could eat from the fridge. Those things were stripped from my life, where everything was just immediately available and I was comfortable. So then I had all these other things that I could do, that I could pursue, but nothing really seemed that important. And so I went into a bit of a depression, and I had to kind of find something to pursue again. I was terrified of being stuck in a stagnant position, or not just terrified of being stuck, but being okay with being stagnant. And I think that's what frightened me the most, was just being readapting to a lifestyle that I didn't like. I understood that I did not like this lifestyle anymore. I needed to be moving. And after a few years back in at university, I started to go back into this stagnant lifestyle, and I've become okay with it. And it's exactly the place that I did not want to be. Fortunately, that's changing a lot now. We're mobile, and I'm doing something that I never really thought I would be doing. But at the same time, I don't have the same kind of desire to go through hiking as I used to, which is really strange. I felt it coming back on the Pennine Way, and part of me was like, oh, I remember everything I loved about through hiking, and I remember everything I hated about through hiking. I kind of slipped back into it without any problem. And I thought that was really interesting. I got a job before I went back to school. Fortunately, I was working at an outfitter selling backpacking gear. So I kind of had an outlet. And fortunately, there was another thru hiker who had just hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. So we would talk for hours every shift about our experiences. And that helped a lot. And it doesn't happen to everyone either, because my friend Lyle, who thru-hiked the trail with me, didn't really have a problem adjusting. He was ready to come home, and I think he was looking forward to finishing the trail and coming home.
So, there it is. We've come a long way, and it's good to see Katahdin in our sights, and I'm ready to go to her.
And I think that was the big difference, is that I wasn't looking forward to finishing at all. I mean, I was looking forward to the big day and the summit, but I wasn't looking forward to it ending. But it ended regardless, and I had to come home and find the next step. And I'm moving on to the next thing. And I think that is an even bigger lesson, a lot of times things will happen. You have to always remember that things will definitely end, and there has to be a next step, there has to be a next chapter, and you're gonna be fine. It's gonna be uncomfortable, 100% guaranteed. There's gonna be some adjustment required, and that is gonna suck to some extent. But afterwards, you're gonna be fine, and you're gonna learn about yourself and how you operate in this world. And a lot of people say, no, I can't take off work, I can't do whatever for whatever reason. But if you really, really want to do something, you will find a way to do it. I think the larger lesson from the Appalachian Trail was that huge tasks can be broken down into smaller segments. Literally one step at a time, one day at a time. You just keep chipping away at it. Decide every day, I'm gonna keep going north. I'm gonna keep going today. Oh, you know, I've got the norovirus. I'm gonna take a day off, throwing up for hours and then recovering from that. And then tomorrow, if I feel up to it, I'm gonna keep going north. And eventually, after 6 months and 10 days of that, you make it to Maine. We're taught to fit things into a box, into a schedule. If it doesn't fit into these preconceived notions, then our idea is maybe not valid. And I think having the courage to use your idea and make it real is the thing that doesn't adapt us as individuals. That's the thing that changes culture. And I think once you're confident enough to be yourself is when we're, as a collective, confident enough to be a collective. That's what culture is. Culture informs us individually, but ultimately it's the individuals that create a culture. I don't know how I started talking about culture. I think if you feel like you're stuck in something, kind of, this is gonna sound super corny, does it feel right? And if it doesn't feel right, if you feel like you should be doing something else, but that thing scares the crap out of you, go for it. I think the thing that scares the crap out of us the most is the thing that we should be doing. If it requires you to get out of a situation and that scares the crap out of you, there's always a certain element of crapping your pants. I think that the unknown is the thing that we fear the most, but I think stepping out into the unknown is the best thing that each of us can do, especially when we feel stuck. Just going out there and either traveling or trying something new, anything. A lot of it will just spark something inside of you to go and do the thing that you're probably meant to do regardless. But right now, this is the adventure.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Mindspace Over Coffee. If you like what I do, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review. I would greatly appreciate it. Stay tuned for next week, and don't forget your coffee.